Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Tzuvos is daf Tesvav. Should be finishing the parak. I don't think we're going to finish the parak today, but we'll try to make up some ground. All these gemaras are super interesting, but today specifically, it's going to be, I think, a little bit tougher than usual, just in terms of some of these concepts and ideas, but try to communicate them as clearly as possible. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is Lenin Zeich Nishmas, Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. We find ourselves on Yudal Amad Aleph. We're in a very basic machlokes between Rabbi Gamliel together with Rabbi Lazar against Rabbi Yoshua regarding Ne'amanus, regarding general credibility. In scenarios where a woman is declaring certain facts or issues, so generally Rabbi Gamliel throughout these Mishnayos say that we believe her. Rabbi Yeshua says we do not believe her. These cases are not all the same cases. There are obviously a number of Mishnayos in different cases, and each one of them, for their own specific reason, Rabbi Gamliel sides with her over that of him. We are in the middle of a Mishnah from Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. The Mishnah describes two scenarios where the Gemara's Pshat, the favorite Pshat, is not, they're not the same scenario. They're two different scenarios. This is the Iris Pshat in the Mishnah. The first scenario is that she goes into seclusion with a man. We don't know anything more than that. And she comes out, and they ask her, "Who was that man?" And he says, "It's okay. I'm still can marry a Kohen." So Rabbi Gamliel says, "Fine, we believe her." A second scenario: she's pregnant, and she's not married. And the question is, who's the father? So she identifies who the man is. So once again, she's afforded credibility according to Rabbi Gamliel. So in both these cases, Rabbi Gamliel says we believe her, and that is generally speaking the viewpoint of Rabbi Gamliel. On the other side, Rabbi Yeshua says we do not. And what we spent most of yesterday discussing is what's behind the shita of Rabbi Gamliel and what is behind the shita of Rabbi Yeshua. We then noted yesterday, and this is where we're going to pick it up, we're on Yudal Amud Aleph. We noted that there seems to be a stira between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Yeshua, between the Mishnah here in Ksuvos and a Mishnah in Adios. So let's go back. We're going to start again from the Mishnah in Adios. We're on Yudal Amud Aleph. We did the Mishnah together yesterday, but let's do it again today. Or a minute, the Gemara is going to challenge now based on a Mishnah. Hey, Rav Yeshua, Rav Yehuda ben Beseira. So this is Adios. Mishnah is in Adios. As the Masechta, it's marketed very well. It's a Mishnayos. It's a series of Mishnayos of Adios. It's testimonies. So you're going to see all the Mishnayos in Adios. We don't do it in the Daf. Adios is at the tail end of Seder Nezikin, and again, for reasons, for executive reasons, certain Masechtas we do, certain Masechtas we do not do. We don't do Adios as in the Daf Yomi. So, but the Mishnah over here describes testimony given by Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, Almanas Issa Sheik Sher Lakuna. If you have Almanas Issa, it's an interesting expression. The literal translation is she's widow formed of dough. Okay, the dough meaning D-O-U-G-H. Widow formed of dough. So she is Ksher LeKuhuna, she's allowed to marry a Kohen. What exactly is the scenario over here? That's not perfectly clear. We're going to go today with Rashi. We went yesterday with Rashi, so we'll be consistent. We'll go again today with Rashi. And Rashi explains the scenario goes as follows. This woman is a suffix in terms of whether or not she is permitted or prohibited to a Kohen. How did she get to this point in her life? So Rashi gives us a somewhat of a detailed background. I'm going to go through Rashi again. Almanas Isha. Rashi writes, Rashi starts at the top of the Amud. She bami koch suffix. Chalak delakam and shenitma ba suffix chalak gon. So Rashi over here gives an example of what happened. Shizarek bali imo harishon la gad suffix karavla suffix karavla. Husband of her mother, the first husband of her mother, not her father, but the first husband of her mother threw her mother a get. Okay, and it wasn't a great toss. It was somewhere between him, the get fell somewhere between him and her. The halachas are, again, simplifying, oversimplifying. If the get is closer to him, it's not a good get. If the get is closer to her, it is a good get. In other words, the construct scenario over here is just to create a situation where it's a suffix, we don't know. And then, suffix karavla, suffix karavla, umes, and then this man dies. So now this woman may be a divorcee, she may be a widow. Her second husband that she chooses in life now is a Kohen. Now this Kohen really shouldn't have married her, but that's neither here nor there. It's not unimportant. It's just, in other words, we're constructing a scenario. Then the second husband that married her is a Kohen. And now the Kohen married a woman who possibly he was not allowed to marry. And then this Kohen had a son. Zeu Safek Chalal. So now this child over here may or may not be a halal. We know that if a kohen marries a grusha, what results from that is a halal. A kohen who's devoid of kahuna, who's not allowed to do the avoda, not allowed to eat truma. In other words, has no kedushas kahuna. This child, however, is a halal. Is a suffik. I'm sorry, correct. He's a suffik. The heid Rav Yehoshua Amanaso Shalzeh Shikshera. Now, let's say a woman marries this halal. Is this woman a halala? Again, we don't know. Meaning the man over here that we just constructed is possibly a halal. The woman that he marries may or may not be a halala. Now remember, she goes into the marriage with a chazakah of being perfectly fine. Now she has relations with this man who may be a halal, may be turning into a halala. Yes or no? We don't know. Ama mukmin alei chazakah v'armin al tafsi len lezumi safek klamer shema balas halal haya. So Rashi says that's a construct scenario of the Mishnah in Adios, where this woman now, being married to this man, who is the product of a questionable union, so this woman is now allowed to go ahead and marry a Cohen. Okay, that's some trip to get to this one scenario. But Rav Yehoshua and Rav Yehuda ben Becerra say that Amanasisa Shikshera Lukahuna. So this widow is allowed to marry a Cohen. So again, let's present the question. Our Mishnah says Rav Yehoshua saying, we don't believe her, we don't believe her, we don't believe her. Meaning we always assume the worst. And meanwhile, we have a Mishnah in Adios, which has a question, and Rav Yeshua's answer to the question is, yeah, it's okay. It's a suffix, yeah, it's okay. That's so the Rav Yehoshua's don't align with one another. So this is where we ended off yesterday. The Gemara's question was, I don't understand. How could you compare the two cases? In our Mishnah in Ksuvos, we're talking about Znus. We're talking about where a woman committed some sort of illicit act. Illicit just simply meaning that it was not in the context of marriage. Right? She had, in the vernacular, she had a fling. So our Mishnah, so Rav Yehoshua says, you know why we'll assume the worst? Because obviously she's not being particularly careful. The Mishnah is in Adios, we're describing marriage. She's marrying a man. So, as Rashi explains over here, she's going to investigate. She's marrying a man. The man may be a halal, all dependent on his history, about his mother receiving a get from her first husband. Maybe it was a get, maybe it wasn't a get. She's going to marry this man. She's going to do the investigation. It's marriage. She'll be more careful. So you can't compare the Mishnah says the Gemara, because our Mishnah is talking about Znus, and the Mishnah in Adios is talking about marriage. Fine. Amar Rava de Rav Yeshua, de Rav Yeshua Kasha, de Rav Gamila, de Rav Gamila Kasha. So Rava says, wait a second. All you did is just, you quoted the first half of the Mishnah in Adios, and you resolved it. And in and of itself, that would have been fine. But there's more to the Mishnah in Adios. Let's see the rest of the Mishnah in Adios, and you'll see the problems are not resolved. Akhtani Seifa. Amar Lahem Rav Gamila Kibanu Edoschem. So Rav Gamliel says to them, meaning to Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, look, you want to say the Eidos, you want to say testimony, this is all Lacha you received, that's fine. But I know that Rav Yochum and Zakeh says, don't you dare. Don't you dare assemble a Beis Din and adjudicate over such a matter. Because Kohanim, if you tell them, you know, distance yourself. Meaning, don't get involved with this kind of woman. It's not a good shidduch for you. That they're ready to hear. But if you want to be Mati or Kohen to marry a woman who may be questionable, Rabbi Gamliel says, no, they're not going to listen to you. Because the Kohanim are, generally speaking, going to be more careful about who they marry. That's Rabbi Gamliel. Now the Gemara says, now we have a problem within Rabbi Gamliel's. What does Rabbi Gamliel say in our Mishnayos? All of our Mishnayos, but specifically the most recent one. Rabbi Gamliel says, we believe her. It's a suffix, we don't know. She says something, we believe her. So over there in the Mishnah Adios, Rabbi Gamliel says, look, you want to tell me to be Mako? That's fine. I accept that. But I'm telling you, I have a tradition from Yochanan ben Zakkai that for the Kohanim we should ever be Mako. And we shouldn't believe. So, sounds like Rav Gamliel, we have a steer within Rav Gamliel. Ela Merava de Rav Gamliel de Rav Gamliel Kasha. So the Gemara says like this. This is now Rav's resolution of the Mishnah Nadios and our Mishnah. When it comes to over there, meaning it's funny, over there, meaning by us, in our Mishnah. In our Mishnah. So, Hasam over there, Bari HaChashema. Look, in our Mishnayos, she knows what happened. Meaning, again, she did something she should not have done, so either seclude herself with a man, or got impregnated by a man, not under the context of marriage. Okay, that's all true. But when all said and done, she knows. Meaning she knows what happened. She can identify who the father's child is. She can identify who she's secluded with. That's what's called bari, tainus bari. She's sure what happened. So if she's sure what happened, so Rabbi Gamliel says we're going to extend credibility. And Rav Yehoshua, nami lo kasha hasam chad sveka hachatre sveka. And as far as Rav Yehoshua is concerned, look, Rav Yehoshua says we don't extend credibility. Everything is really contingent on suffik. Meaning, if there's one suffik, Rabbi Yehoshua says we stay away. If it's trace sveka, like the case in Adios, if it's a double suffik, so then we're going to, Rabbi Yehoshua says we'll be makel. Okay. Now, here's the part where it gets a little bit tricky, and there's going to be a couple times today where it's going to get tricky. The Gemara over here is referring to the case in Adios as a case of sveik sveika. It's a double suffik. Now, the language of the Gemara right now is trace sveika, but in just a moment, the Gemara is going to use the term sveik sveika as well. It's a double suffik. The case that we constructed, remember Rashi's case? It's not really a sveik sveika. In other words, what happened? Everything really, really comes back to the part of the tossing of the get. Right? The first husband of this woman tossed the get to his wife, may have gotten there, may have not gone there, and that's it. Really, meaning that's a suffik. Then what happens is she marries another man. The second man she marries is a Kohen. Then they have a child. The child may or may not be a halal. Then a woman marries this man, and that woman may or may not have married a halal, depending on whether he is or isn't a halal, which really depends on whether the first husband did or did not throw the get. So the truth of the matter is that, and Rashi notes this, Rashi realizes, this is not your classic case of sveik sveika. We're not really introducing a new doubt into it. Sveik sveika over here, or the Gemara's language over here, trace sveika, is to be used a little more loosely, right? It's a little more loosely than we generally use. It just means that the question over here isn't dealing with the original case, but it's a derivative of the original case, even though every derivative really is all pinning on that same question, but nevertheless, because it's a further development from the original case, so therefore, what the Gemara here refers to as trace feika. Admittedly, that's difficult. And admittedly, Rashi is not the only pshat in our Gemara. There are other pshatim in the Gemara that give a different case altogether, and so it comes out that the language of trace feika works out a little bit better. Our purpose over here is to go through the simple pshat of the Gemara with Rashi. That's generally, that's the game plan. So I'm presenting it like Rashi. Okay, so let's now go back to the Gemara and let's recap. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Gamliel, there's no stira. Why is there no stira? Because Rabbi Gamliel says that if she has tainus bari, if she's clear what happened, she's identifying what happened, we believe her. That's our Mishnah. The Mishnah Adios, she doesn't know. And because she doesn't know, she doesn't have a tainus bari, and therefore she's not extended credibility. That's how to resolve Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Yehoshua, very simple. Once there's a suffix, one suffix, Rabbi Yehoshua says, that's it. I don't care what she says. Lo mi pi anu chayim. She can say whatever she wants to say. If there's a suffix, there's a suffix, and I'm not going to be makel. In the Mishnah Nadios, I'll be makel, but the Gemara says an explanation, Rabbi Yehoshua, that's because of a double suffix. The Gemara then gives us a summary statement. The Gemara doesn't do this that often. I love when the Gemara does this, like just to make sure that we're not totally lost. The Gemara says, Hilkach, therefore. So from Rabbi Gamliel's standpoint, if you have a tainus bari, if she knows what happened and she identifies what happened, so from Rabbi Gamliel's standpoint, great. Even against one suffik, we're still going to believe her. But if she doesn't know what happened, so then she's extended obviously no credibility because she doesn't know what happened. She's just speculating, and her speculation is not going to help her. Even if it's a sveik sveika, even if it's a double doubt like the Mishnah Nadios. Le Rabbi Yehoshua, and now let's go to Rabbi Yehoshua's standpoint. Again, summary statement. Alam lechat sveika, one suffik is strong. Tafil bebari nami pasal. Meaning that if you have one suffik is going to devastate. Even against her tainus bari, even if she knows what happened, she's telling you what happened, but if it's a suffik, her tainus bari is just simply going to be ignored. Sveik, on the other hand, for Rabbi Yehoshua, is grounds for being lenient, even if she doesn't even know what happened. But sveik by itself is enough to permit, and therefore, according to Rabbi Yehoshua, sveik will be mekel. Okay, wonderful. So that is a summary statement of the position of Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua. We contrasted our Mishnah against the Mishnah Nadios, and the Gemara Rava has formulated a way to resolve the two contradictions. Then the Gemara also gave us a summary statement of both opinions. Rabbi Gamliel, throughout the Mishnayos, is the accepted viewpoint. That's a simple answer. Tanur Rabbanan, the Gemara starts now with a quoting of a Tosefta. We're on the bottom of Yudal Amadalf, Ezu Almanas Isa. An example of Almanas Isa, Kol She'en Ba'lo Mishum Mamzeres Ba'lo Mishum Nesinas Ba'lo Mishum Avde Malachim. Okay, as the Tosefta is being presented to us right now, it doesn't read smoothly. So what we're going to do is we're going to just going to read, I'm going to translate without much understanding, and then afterwards we'll gain a better understanding. So in a case of Almanas Isa, now remember, Almanas Isa Mutter, or Muteris. Right? She's permitted. That's what the Mishnah Nadios told us. So what is an example of Almanas Isa? This woman, this quote-unquote questionable woman, if she has no Mamzeros, no Nesinas, no Avde Malachim, meaning she's Jewish, and there's no psul about her. She's not a Mamzer, a Nesina, or a servant of a king. Okay. Again, not much understanding. Just, we're going to go through it. And that's Shita number one. We'll call that the Tanakama. Amar Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says we're on the top of Yigdalam and Beis. Shamati Koshein Ba'echa Mikolayla Masil Nekahuna. I heard, says Rabbi Meir, that if she doesn't have any of the above, she's allowed to marry a Kohen. Okay. Even as we don't understand what's going on right now, Rabbi Meir seems to be repeating what the Tanakama just said. Why is that a new Shita? Good. Hold on that question. We're just going to keep reading. Rabbi Bishimon ben Elazar, Amar Mishum Rabbi Meir, and then we're going to have now a third opinion. Although it's really 2B, meaning the Rabbi Meir was 2A, and this is Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar's formulation of Rabbi Meir. V'chein ayah Rabbi Shimon Menasi Amar Kidvarav Ezu Amanas Isa. Give me an example of Amanas Isa. Kol shenit ba safik chalal. If it's questionable chalal, that's okay. Makir Nisrael Mamzerim Shebenem Ve'Makir Chalal Shebenem. The Jewish people recognize Mamzerim, but the Jewish people do not recognize chalal. Period. Okay, wonderful. We went through the Tosefta from beginning to end, and we don't really have much understanding of what happened over here. We have a Shita, we know this, we have three Shitas, Tanakama, Rameir, and Rameir version 2.0. We know that there's going to be some debate. As of right now, we don't even know what the difference is between the Tanakam and Rav Meir, and then the second version of Rav Meir, we don't even know what that's coming along and saying. We don't worry about Chalal, we do worry about Mamzer. What does all that mean? The Gemara is going to now clarify. And from here until really the Mishnah coming up, it's just going to be a clarification of the Braisa. Amar, Ezu Amanas Isa Koshein Ba'lo Mishum Mamzeres V'lo Mishum Nesinas V'lo Mishum Avde Malachim. So first the Gemara quotes the Tanakama. Good. HaChalal Kasher. Now, the sounds like from the Tanakama's viewpoint, look what the Tanakama mentioned. Mentioned Mamzer, mentioned Nesina, and mentioned Avde Malachim. Those are three groups of people that you're not allowed to marry. Okay. Tanakama seems to be perfectly fine with Chalal. A Chalal is an Isser in the Torah. Meaning, a Kohen cannot marry a Chalal in a Torah. Why didn't the Tanakhama mention Chalal? So, are you going to suggest that the Tanakhama is okay with a Chalal? Can't possibly be. Maisha Hanech Zaraisa Chalal Nami Daraisa. Mamzer Nisin of the Malachim. They're Isuri Daraisa. So is a Chalal. A Kohen cannot marry a Chalal, or a Chalala, I should say. It's an Isser in a Torah. Okay. So that's question number one. Vistu. And then, let's just keep going. Amar Rav Meir Shemati Kol Shein Ba'echa Mikolei L'Masil L'Kuhunayin Tanakama. Rav Meir seems to be just parroting the opinion of the Tanakama. There's nothing wrong with that, but you know, and I know, that whenever Braises present Rav Meir a second opinion, the second opinion is coming to argue on the first opinion. So Rav Meir, what's Rav Meir introducing over here? Vistu. And furthermore, Gemara says, let's just ask all the questions right now. And the reason why is because there's going to be one answer to answer all these questions. Visu. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Rabbi Shimon ben Meir, V'chena, Rabbi Shimon ben Asi, Omer Kedvar, Rav Ezu, Amanas Isa. This is now just a citation of the third opinion. Kol Shenit Ma'ba Safik Chalal, Ma'kirin Yisrael, Mamzerin. I'm sorry. Kol Shenit Ba Safik Chalal. Safik Chalal, we're ready to tolerate. Why? I'm asking the question as if we're going to give an answer. Makirin Yisrael Mamzerim Shebeneim Ve'in Makirin Chalal Shebeneim. Because we recognize the Mamzerim, but we don't recognize the Chalalim. V'amar Reisha Chalal Kasher. So, now, didn't we say in the Reisha that the Chalal is acceptable? Again, Chalal not being acceptable, but a questionable halal being acceptable. So if we're not recognizing the halalim amongst us, so shouldn't we be more careful about the halalim? Okay. So at this point in time, the Gemara firmly acknowledges that we don't understand a lot of what just happened in that brisa. The Tanna Kamma seems to be conspicuously leaving out halal when it's an Issa d'oraisa. Rav Meir seems to be repeating exactly what the Tanna Kamma said, even though the brisa brought him as a second opinion. And then the third opinion seems to say, oh, don't worry about halal, even though we don't know who the halalim are. Okay, so at this juncture, at this point in time, what's happening? We don't know. The Gemara is going to give one answer. I'm Rav Yochanan. Now, this answer is going to be an interesting answer, and I'm going to read the answer kipshuta, the simple pshat of this answer, although the ramifications from this answer are going to be really serious. But let's right now just deal with the Gemara's answer. I'm Rav Yochanan, mamzer tzovech lechalal shosek. So Rav Yochanan says, here's the case that the Brisa is describing. Somebody's being accused of being a mamzer. What's his response? Soveach. Screams out in protest. How can you call me a mamzer? I'm not. Okay, I know I didn't do such a good job screaming out. Okay, but that's the accusation. The accusation to somebody is he's a mamzer. He screams and he's protesting and he says that's crazy. V'chalal shosek. On the other hand, however, he's also the same person. According to Rashi. Same person is being accused of being a halal, and what's his response? Okay. No, I'm nothing. In other words, no response whatsoever to the halal. Igami now. Tanna Kamma sever kol pasul dekar relei v'shasik pasul. Tanna Kamma's position is as follows. You accuse somebody of being something, a disqualification, so, and he protests. Okay. So that means it's because it's not true. His silence is acquiescence. If he's quiet to the accusation, so it means that's because he is what you're saying he is. There's a Gemara in Kiddushin. It's a great Gemara. We'll see it soon enough in the Daf Yomi. By soon enough, I mean a year from now. The Gemara in Kiddushin says that kol aposel b'muma posel. When you accuse somebody of being something, that's probably because you are what you accuse him of being. It's great. Okay, good. So I'm just throwing in an editorial note, not editorial. It's really a Gemara and Kedushin that whenever you make an accusation, so you got to be careful about what it says about the accuser, not the accused. Okay, good.
Maybe he's quiet because he can marry anybody from Israel.
Good. So, but we're right now just dealing it from the perspective of the accused. From the perspective of the accused, the Tanna Kamma says, you know, if he's quiet, it means it's true. That's what the Tanna Kamma's viewpoint is. Meaning, if he's being accused of any of the above, and by the way, we have to add halal to the list, because according to the Tanna Kamma, there's no difference. If he's being accused of any of the above, and he's quiet, it means because he is what he is. He has to, in order to vindicate himself, protest verbally to any one of these accusations. Okay, that's the Tanna Kamma's viewpoint. Now, I know what's going to come out very strange from this is that the halacha would mean that if you're being accused of something and you don't protest, that's acquiescence. Intuitively, it just doesn't sound right. But again, just dealing with the pshat in the brisa. That's the viewpoint of the Tanna Kamma. V'kama la Reb Meir. And on that, Reb Meir now is going to argue. Hana chudika pasuk lebekal v'ashaso chalal kasher v'adashasik misham deloich balei. I'm sorry, deloich balei. And Reb Meir's point of contention is like this. I agree with you with 75% of the time. Meaning, mamzer nesin avde malachim. I agree with you. You accuse somebody of being that, and he doesn't protest. It's because he's agreeing. I disagree with you about halal. You accuse somebody of being a halal, and you get a shrug of the shoulders. It's not because he is what you're saying. It's just he doesn't care. What kind of accusation is that? You're halal. Okay, great. What would that mean practically if he were telling the truth? It would mean that you can't marry kohanim. You can marry the rest of the Jewish people. It's not a terribly, there's no need for anyone to get defensive of such an accusation because, quite frankly, it's not the worst accusation in the world. You just don't care. Meaning, not because it's true, just what difference does it make? Okay, good. So, we have now the opinion of the Tanna Kamma, we have the opinion of Rav Meir. Tanakhama says that anytime you're quiet to any accusation, you are what you're being called. Rabbi Meir argues on the point of halal. The Kamalei Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar.
He's saying that halal
Yeah, in other words, he didn't. Yeah,
I thought it is
an Issa D'Oraisa. We're just what we're saying now in the Braisa. The Pshat in the Braisa is not what he is. What's what he's being accused of, and his reaction to the accusation, and whether or not we need a reaction to the accusation. According to the Tanakhama, we need a reaction. Once you don't have a reaction to an accusation, he is what he is.
React because he says he can marry anybody, but he can't marry women.
I understand that, but that just the Gemara is saying that he doesn't need to react because he doesn't care. He simply doesn't care. The Kamala Rav Shimon Elazar Tanakhama. Now the Rav Shimon Elazar says to the Tanakhama. Tanakhama over here, as Rashi points out, is not the Tanakhama. It means Rabbi Meir. So I'm sorry, the Tanakhama to Rabbi Meir. Ish mi'alach demachshir Rabbi Meir b'shtika lo dekar lechalav v'shasik. Ella de Karole Mamzer Vishasik. You got it mixed up. In other words, the silence is not towards halal. Silence towards halal is not good. It's silence towards Mamzer, which quite frankly is not a big deal. And why is it not a big deal? Behind the Shasik suffer Mamzer Kalisle. Because for somebody to call me a Mamzer out of nowhere, out of left field, who's going to buy that? Meaning, Mamzer is a big deal. Okay, it means that the mother and father had illicit relations. Could be adultery, could be any one of the other arayos in the Torah, but it's a big deal. And there should have been rumors circulating about this person. For somebody to come out of nowhere, out of left field, and to call me a mamzer, so there he can get a shoulder shrug. And the reason why he can get a shoulder shrug is because if this was true, people would have known about it before. But the mamzer, and he protests chalal, and he's quiet. So such a person is possible. V'hayde ishtik sever mistayed de la mafkele mikahal. And the reason why is because being called the chalal and you're quiet, it's because right now you're ready to accept that status. And in other words, it's a lighter accusation. It's something where, like, okay, you want to call me chalal, good. But don't let people know what I really am. Meaning, the reason why he's quiet is that nobody does any further investigation. And so, that in that case, in such a scenario where he's protesting to Mamzer, but he's quiet to Halal, it's a red flag that really the truth of the matter is there's something more seriously wrong with him. And under those circumstances, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says that you have to be worried and you have to be concerned. Okay, so let's make a summary statement. We have now, all right, the Gemara did it earlier today, but not now. So we have now three opinions in terms of what the Pshat and the Brais is. The Tosefta, which started on the bottom of Yudal Amad Alf, now, which continues to the top of Yudal Amad Beis, presents three opinions. And the way the Gemara formulates it now, this is Rav Yochanan's Pshat and the Braisa, is that according to the Tanakhama, if somebody levels an accusation against you and you're quiet and you don't respond, it means that's because you are what you say they are. Okay. Okay, good. That's the Tanakhama. Rabbi Meir says that's true with all the above except for halal because nobody cares about being called a halal. It's not a big deal. You're still right. So therefore, a lack of response to halal, it does not mean you're a halal because who cares? And then finally, the third opinion, Rav Shimon ben Elazar says that if somebody calls you a mamzer and you're quiet, that's not a big deal because everybody would have known it earlier. If somebody calls you a mamzer and you were tzaveach, someone then calls you a chalal and you're quiet, that's a red flag that something's wrong because you're quiet to the accusation of chalal because you don't want people to investigate any further. These are the three opinions as presented in the Braisa. Comes out from all this that, and the halacha follows like the Tanakhama, right? The way it's brought down in the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch is like the Tanakhama. And then it would come out then that anytime someone levels an accusation against you, that means that you have to protest. And if you don't, you are what they say they are. The Rishonim already point out, you can see it in the round in the back, the Rishonim already point out that nowadays that's not true. Meaning, this is true back in the time of the Gemara where an accusation was followed up by an investigation by Beis Din. Nowadays, we don't have a Beis Din, we don't have any investigation that follows it up. So nowadays, just because someone accuses you of something does not necessarily mean you are what they say they are. But anyway, the simple... Psh- pshat of the Gemara as we presented it. Let's just finish up to the Mishnah. Tanichat of Rav Yossi Amir Shesok Mamzer Kasher Shesok Chalal Pasol. One brisa says that according to Rav Yossi, your silence to the accusation of Mamzer is acceptable. Silence to the accusation of Chalal is disqualified. V'tani idach Shesok Chalal Kasher Shesok Mamzer Pasol. The other brisa goes the opposite. Lo Kasher Atanakam Aliba Derab Meir Hadrabi Shimon Lazar Aliba Derab Meir. And then these two brises are just simply two different formulations of Rabbi Meir, version 1.0 and version 2.0 of Rabbi Meir. Okay. That was a lot. Okay, we're up to the next Mishnah. We are now, this is the final Mishnah of the first parak of the Masechta. It tells us a story, not a pleasant one at that. I'm Rav Yossi Maisa Betinoka Sheyard Alamalos Mayimin Min Ha'ayin. Story goes, Rav Yossi is telling the story about a young girl who went to go fill water at the well, and Venan son, she was raped. Am Rav Yochanan Nuri Imrov Anshei Ha'ir Masdin LeKohuna Arizeh Tinas LeKohuna. Now, what do we know about the accuser? We don't have any identity. But we do know the following. Rav Yochanan Nuri says that if the majority of the people in the city are fit to marry a Kohen, meaning relations with her would not make her a Zona. Remember, a woman, if she has relations with a man who is prohibited to her, she is rendered a Zona, even if those relations are not something that she wanted, even if she wasn't a complicit participant in the act. Nevertheless, she will be a Zona if that man who had relations with her is a pasul, somebody who's disqualified, either a Ovi Kochavim or any one of the Yisurim. Right? We went over in the Gemara Yavamos, actually, in detail what exactly disqualifies her. As long as we know that the majority of the men in the city are Kashal Kahuna, so therefore her status is going to be that she's Ksherulak Harizet Tinasa Lakuna, she's allowed to marry a Kohen in the future, meaning she will not be rendered a Zona, but that's only based on the fact that the majority of the people in the city is allowed to marry a Kohen. All right, now. Amalei Revel Rav Nachman Rav Yochanan Nuri Damar Keman. Gemara over here is bothered by a simple question. The Mishnah in of itself, if this Mishnah lives in a vacuum, the Mishnah would have been fine. The problem is that this is the end of the first parak. What we just spent the last two dapim doing, Daf Yud Gimel, Daf Yud Dalet, and now we're moving on to today's daf as well, is we just went through machlokus after machlokus between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Gamliel says repeatedly, Ne'emena, she's believed. Rabbi Yoshua says repeatedly, Eino Ne'emena, she's not believed. Here now we have a Mishnah, and the Mishnah over here is not taking her position at all into consideration. Our Mishnah just simply says, you go with Rov, and that's it.
Is she a Bora here?
Is she
making a claim? Is she a Bora?
Yeah. So right. So that. So stay tuned. I specifically held out that information because the Gemara's answer is going to not so much clarify, but basically resolve that issue. So Amalei Rav Le Rav Nachman Rav Yochanan Nuri Damar Keman Iker Rabbi Gamliel Filah Barov Psulim Nami Machsher. So the Gemara says, look, if we're following like Rabbi Gamliel's position, remember Rabbi Gamliel said that her claim is all you need, and even if it's going against a majority of Psulim, right? Like we've been saying all along, as long as she makes a claim as to who the man was, so she has credibility. So it's pretty clear from the Gemara that she's saying something. So Iker Rabbi Gamliel Afilu Barov Psulim Nami Machsher, and Iker Rabbi Yoshua Afilu Barov Ksherim Nami Pasul. And according to Rabbi Yoshua, I don't care if the majority of the people there are Ksherim. Remember, Rabbi Yoshua says that even with one Safek and even with her Tainas Bari, Rabbi Yoshua says we just don't believe it. So Amalei Hachem Rav Yudah Merav. Okay, so we have a Mishnah regarding a woman who was violated. We don't know who the man who was violated. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says in our Mishnah is that as long as the majority of the people are kash lakuna, she's allowed to marry. But the Gemara is bothered by a really simple question. Well, what just happened to the last two blot of Gemara, where we had a debate between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua, and which side is our Mishnah taking on this issue? I'm Rav Yudah Merav. We're now on the top of Tezvav Amud Aleph. Bikronosh Shel Tzipori Haya Maisa. The incident was regarding Kronos, literally means wagons of the Tzipori. What does that mean? Take a look at the first Rashi on the Amud. The Yamashuk. Rashi writes, we're talking about market day. Shehasios v'shayaros mimakom acher ba'usham. Where you have wagons and caravans coming from other locations. So in other words, you have two populations that we're dealing with. Number one, the local population, and number two, the population that's coming into town. Uchid Rabbi Ami, and the double population over here is going to work to her advantage. Halachically, the Amar Rabbi Ami v'hushai sasiyu shobani adam kshirim overus l'sham. Rabbi Ami says that our Mishnah is talking about a case where you had a double rove. The majority of the people that, in other words, the majority of the local population are ksherim, and the majority of the people coming through town also are ksherim as well. It's a double, just give me a moment. It's a double rove. And it's a double rove, and what we're going to now suggest is that the author of our mission is Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Yoshua, who normally does not credit her with any taina. And Rabbi Yoshua says, like we concluded on today, on yesterday's daf, although I said it today, is that as long as there's one suffix, that's it, she's disqualified. However, even Rabbi Yoshua is going to agree that in a scenario of a double rove, so that's going to work to her advantage. Again, just give me a moment. Uchid Rabbi Yana, Dama Rabbi Yana, Niv Elis Bikronos Kshera. Rabbi Yana says that as she was violated, Bikronos. Now, literally, that means in the wagons. But the, we'll get back to that in just a second. Niv Elis Bikronos Kshera, it's the Kahuna. If she was violated in the wagons, so then she would be Kashel Kahuna. Bikronos Agadadcha. Now, the Gemara says, halachically speaking, what difference does it make where it took place? Ela Nivelas Bishas Kronos Kshera Kahuna. It means simply that if it was a time where there was a caravan coming through town, and they're now introducing another majority, so then you could be Mekal. However, if someone from Tzipori went ahead and had relations with her, but in other words, you didn't have the benefit of this double majority, so then the child is going to be Shesuki, meaning we do not know whether or not the father was of a good lineage or not of a good lineage. Okay, so where we are at the Gemara right now is that we have a Mishnah. Mishnah says that if you have, if the majority of the people of the city were Kashla Kahuna, so then this woman is still Kshera, to which the Gemara says, is our Mishnah going like Rabbi Gamliel, like Rabbi Yoshua? I don't understand. And to which the answer of that question is now, is that our Mishnah is really Rabbi Yoshua, who normally is Machmir, but even Rabbi Yoshua would concede in a double rove that he would be Mekel. Okay. Now, why isn't one rove enough? Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to ask that question.
Why would it be case of Sveka? Because if we have a doubter, Sveka in their population and the second population.
It's even better. This case is even better than a Sveka. Meaning it's a double rove. One rove by itself is telling you that the man who violated was Kusher. And then you have another rove, another population going through town. It's better than a Sveka. It's a double rove. So, and again, question, why do I need a double rove? So the Gemara is going to answer that question in just a bit. Ki hadechi also Rav Dimi, we're continuing the Gemara, Tezvav Amin Aleph, about 8 lines from the top. Ki hadechi also Rav Dimi, Amar Ziri, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Ve'amila Amar Ziri, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Ochan Achar Rov Ha'ir, Ve'ino Achar Rov Siyah. You follow the majority of the city, you don't follow the majority of the passerbys of those going through town. Kapilai, the Gemara says, I don't understand. In terms of an argument, it goes the other way. The people in the city are stationary. The people coming through town are mobile. Let me say it again. The people in town are stationary. The people passing through are mobile. So again, we're just going to clarify, and it's essentially going to be the same point we just made previously, that the majority of the people of the city are ksherim. The majority of the people coming through town also are ksherim. But if all I had was just the people in the city, that's not enough. And if all I had was the majority of the people coming through, that's not going to be enough. My time and the Gemara says, because even though a caravan passing through is halachically better for reasons the Gemara is about to articulate, nevertheless, that by itself is not going to be enough, because if we rely on that rove, we're going to end up relying on the rove of the people in the city, and that's simply not sufficient. The Rova Yernami Dekaazli Inulagaba called the Parsh Maruba Parsh. So the Gemara says, and even if I have the majority of the city, so don't we normally have a principle of rov? Meaning, isn't it possible that one of the people of the city moved in her direction, making that a classic case of rov? So the Gemara says, so the Gemara says that what could happen is that she would go to one of the people within the city. The one of the people in the city is what's called kavua, it's stationary, and the rule is that it's kavua, the Amar Rav Zera, and Rav Zera says, call kavua, kemechza mechza dami, that kavua, anytime you have a stationary item, so even though that stationary item represents a majority, but because the item is stationary, so it has a halachic status of mechza mechza, it's like 50-50. Okay. And we're about to enter into the Gemara. We do this a number of times as we go through Shas, 4 times in total. That's not my Bekiyas, that's me just looking at the side of the Gemara. Psachim, Chulim, Nida, and Ksuvos. 4 times throughout Shas where we had this idea of Mechza al Mechza. I'm sorry, Kol Kavua Kemechza al Mechza. So let me just explain it outside in a summary form, and then we're going to go over it inside as well. We have a general idea that the majority rules. Okay, that's an idea, that's a concept that we've seen time and again throughout Shas. When you have rov, once you have a majority, it's a majority rule. That's true by Beis Din, in terms of deciding halacha. It's true by, if I have one non-kosher food get mixed up with other kosher foods, then it's unidentifiable. So then it gets bottled, then it gets nullified by the majority. We have this idea of majority. However, we're going to put a serious limitation on this idea of rov, and that is kavua. That if the majority is not moving, if it's all stationary, so we have a principle of kol kavua, anytime something is stationary, kemechza amechza dami. It does not matter what the actual numbers are, we always treat it like 50-50. And it's interesting, the Gemara, today's daf is going to teach us that that's true both as a chumra and even as a kula. Meaning numbers never matter, as long as it's stationary, we're always going to treat it like 50-50. Does this rule have any kind of logic behind it? My invitation to you is knock yourself out. Give me a second. If you want to try to think this through in terms of giving some sort of intuitive understanding to this halacha, that when the items are stationary, not in motion, so then we no longer look at the numbers and we always treat like 50-50. Is there some sort of intuitive nature to this? I don't know. It really doesn't matter. Meaning, that's simply the halacha. In today's daf, we're going to see the Gemara is going to set a pasuk that describes how we know this halacha. But when all said and done, that's just simply the halacha. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is as follows. We have a scenario. It's a most unfortunate scenario in our Mishnah where a woman was violated. So what do we say? That the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Yoshua. Now Rabbi Yoshua says that normally by one safek, that's it. In a scenario where I have a double rove, majority of the people in the city are ksherim, and then there are people coming through town, and those people are ksherim. So then the woman who was violated, and again, who is the violator? The candidate is either coming from somebody in the city or somebody coming through town. So that is the woman is going to be okay. Now, based on what we just learned in the Gemara, so let me try to present this as clearly as possible. The most critical component to this entire discussion is the people coming through town. The people coming through town are traveling. From a halachic standpoint, they're better. And they're better because they're moving. They're in motion. And when you deal with this halacha of rov, you need the suffix to emanate from something which is in motion. Meaning the people traveling through town. Now, motion versus stationary, you understand. By the time the man gets to her, they're both going to be in the same place. But when dealing with the definition of motion versus stationary, meaning the suffix is emanating from something that was just there or something that got there. That's the difference between motion versus stationary. So the people coming through town are in motion. They're really halachically better in establishing a rov than the locals, because the locals themselves are stationary. Now the Gemara acknowledged that even for the local population, if one of them moved from where he was to go to the girl, that's called in motion. And that would have been halachically acceptable. Meaning then we could have said he is part of the rov. However, the Gemara then pointed out, I'm just recapping what we saw already, just hopefully giving us a good understanding of what just happened. The Gemara then pointed out, but it's also a possibility that she went to one of the people in the local population, and then it goes back to the status of kavua, and again, kol kavua kemechsa mechsa dami. Then that principle of kavua turns it into a 50-50, and we go back to our rules of Rav Yehoshua. Once it's a suffix, that's it, it's over.
What about Ruba de Itakama?
Doesn't matter. Now, the Gemara makes sense.
It's sitting in front of you.
Understood. In terms of these halachas, that doesn't play a role. Doesn't play a factor. And in fact, we're going to see that in just a moment. Okay. Umi beina trei ruba. Okay, that's what we have so far. So we are in the middle of Tesvav and Aleph. The Gemara says double rov. Really, we have that. Vatanya. Well, I'm sorry. Do we need a double rov? The Gemara quotes a brisa. Teisha chanios kolam mochos basa shchut avachas mochos basa nevela. You have. I would think of mainstream Kew Garden Hills, but you know we're not yet here at this point in Boca where you have such a scenario. But in other words, you have 10 stores. And nine of them are selling kosher meat, and one is selling nevela. And you got meat from one of the stores, and you don't know which one you got to. In other words, you suffered from just a momentary lapse of total awareness. And sfeiko aser, so now it's a suffix, and it's going to be aser. Aser? What do you mean? None of those stores were keeping kosher. And I know, not the first time we've gone through this brisa, and I know, right, this halacha doesn't seem to be taking your habits into consideration. I mean, habitually, you're probably going into the kosher store. You're not going into the non-kosher store. Right. Right. And so from that standpoint, it is difficult to understand, but it doesn't matter. Meaning, let's just deal with the basic point that we're learning right now. And that is, because the suffix comes from a stationary item, meaning the store, so now numbers no longer apply. It's 9 versus 1? No, it's not. It's 50-50. And therefore, suffix, it's a suffix and an iser daraisa, therefore it's usar. Uven nimsa alachar achar rov. However, let's say a meat finds its way into the middle of the street. Okay? And which store did it come from? So you look around. 9 stores are kosher. 1 store is not kosher. Perfect. That's rov. Because that piece of meat now went into motion. Now, how it got into the middle of the street? It doesn't matter. In other words, it got there. So once it got there, so that's called in motion, and therefore, we go back to the rules of rov. Now, the Gemara says that even if the doors of the city are closed, mala also beyochsen. Meaning, the reason why we have this need of a double rov, of a double majority, is because we're talking about whether or not this girl is allowed to marry a kohen, and it's a chumra. Meaning, mala also beyochsen. You're going to see that term a lot again and again. It means it's a chumra derabanan, the need, the requirement of a double rov. And the reason why we need a double rov is because for marriage and for yichus purposes, the chachamim were extra stringent. And here's the Gemara now teaching us that this rule of kavua is both going to, it's generally going to hurt us, but halachically it can also help us as well. How did Reb Zera know this? The Gemara says that case we just went over where you went into a store, you don't know which store you went into. 9 of them are kosher, 1 of them is not kosher, and now because the suffix emanates from a store, from a stationary store, so therefore we're going to be machmir. That's a chumrah. Where do we find this rule being serving as a kula? Ella, the Gemara says, comes from the following. 9 frogs and 1 sheretz. Okay, we're talking about the carcass of these dead animals. A tzvardeya, a frog, the carcass does not give off tumma, which is great, because there are plenty of them here. The sheretz, on the other hand, as if we can identify what that is, but a sheretz, the carcass of a sheretz, is going to give off tumma. And 9 frogs, 1 sheretz, and I touch one of them. So there, even though 9 non-tame items, 1 tame item, doesn't matter. Right? Kol kavua, as long as these items were stationary, kol kavua kemechza machzadami. Very good. Just give me a moment. Hasanam lechumra. Ela miteisha shratzim etzvardeya echad b'neihem. So the Gemara says that goes like this. I have 9 shratzim and 1 tzvardeya. Good. The numbers are telling me that I probably touched the sheretz. But one of those items that are dead is a tzvardeya. Now I know I touched something creepy and slimy, and I don't know what that slimy item was that I touched. In a private domain, tame. Birishus harabim, sfeiko tahor. But if I do so in a public area, so now, what do I know? What are the rules of Suffolk Tumah? Suffolk Tumah Bereshos Yachid, Tame. Suffolk Tumah Bereshos Arabim, Tahor. And even though, most probably, I touched the sheretz, because nine of those items were sheretzim, and only one was a tzvardeya. But because they were stationary, what does a halach of kavua tell me? Kol kavua, kemech tzamech zadami. It brings me back to 50-50. And what's the rule by Suffolk Tumah Bereshos Arabim? Safek Tahor. There we have it. There we have a scenario there where it's a limited scenario, but it's there that the rule, the principle of Kavua can bring me to a point of leniency of Kula. All right. We'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up. Tomorrow, how do we know this idea of Kavua? Meaning, where is it sourced in the Torah? We're starting with that part tomorrow. And tomorrow, God willing, we'll finish up. We're going to quote a Mishnah Machshirin. It's going to be such an interesting Mishnah. We're going to comment on that Mishnah Machshirin, finish up the first parak, and God willing, make our way back to where we should be tomorrow as we go into the second parak.